Hello, this is Rita Schulte, and I'll be reading the pantograph for Saturday, March 30th, Sunday, March 31st, and Monday, June 1st. We'll begin on page 1 of Saturday, May 30th issue with an article headlined, Nursing Home Sees Two Deaths. Bloomington Rehab Pair raises total to 13. Two new deaths and two new cases in the pandemic were confirmed by the McLean County Health Department on Friday. Two women, both residents of the Bloomington Rehabilitation and Healthcare Center, are the most recent patients to die of COVID-19. So far, 13 people have died and 218 cases have been confirmed in the county. One was in her 90s and the other was a woman in her 70s. 10 of the 13 deaths in the county have connections to the long-term care facility. 9 were residents, and 1 was an employee. The department also reported 175 people have recovered, 3 remain hospitalized, and 27 are in home isolation. On Thursday, 96 people were tested at the COVID-19 testing site at the fairgrounds on Bloomington's west side. The site can handle vehicles and walk-ups. Anyone who can follow the directions for the self-test nasal swab can use the site. Additionally, beginning next week on Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, there will be limited bus service from the transfer station just east of the Bloomington Walmart. A bus will make loops to accommodate people without vehicles who want to be tested. Macon County officials announced 2 more confirmed cases Friday, bringing that county's total to 194. Of those, 99 people have been released from isolation. 5 are hospitalized, 71 are recovering at home, and 19 residents have died. There was 1 new case reported in Logan County, bringing the total number of positive cases to 11. All prior patients in Logan County have recovered and been released from isolation. 5 new cases were reported in LaSalle County, which now has 148 confirmed cases. No new cases in DeWitt, Piatt, or Ford counties. Statewide officials announced 1,622 additional cases in Illinois and 86 additional deaths. Currently, the Department of Public Health is reporting a total of 117,455 cases, including 5,270 deaths in 101 counties in Illinois. Edgar County reported its first case on Thursday. Scott County is the only Illinois county not to report a single case. The preliminary 7-day statewide positivity rate, the percent of positive results from total tests from May 22nd to May 28th, is 8%. Also, from page 1 of Saturday's pantograph, is an article with the headline, We're Back. Opening of outdoor dining thrills patrons and businesses. Bloomington resident Lori Bell's joy over the opening of outdoor dining and bar service on Friday spilled over into impromptu dancing without music outside a downtown Bloomington bar. We're dancing. We're back. We're back downtown. We're on Main Street. We're at the bistro. We couldn't be happier, she said, while showing off some dance moves in an outdoor seating area of the bar at 316 North Main Street. We've got our masks on, we're social distancing, and we're here for some summer fun. It has been more than 2 months since Governor J.B. Pritzker announced the shutdown of indoor dining rooms at restaurants and bars in Illinois to stem the spread of the COVID-19 pandemic. Many of the establishments turned to carry out curbside pickup or delivery options to stay in business. On Friday, the restaurants and bars were allowed to reopen for food and alcohol service in outdoor seating areas, but indoor dining will not be permitted until the state's reopening plans reaches phase 4, possibly months away. Patrons and owners in Bloomington Normal welcomed the change with smiles under weather ideal for al fresco dining. "I'm just glad to be out of the house. I've been bored as hell," said Joe Stubblefield, while enjoying a Budweiser at one of the tables under the canopy set up in two parking spaces in front of McGuire's Bar and Grill, 220 North Center Street. He had been working for Illinois State University's food service, but then the campus was shut down during the pandemic. Jeff Moore, Jim Kraft, and Marty Kopfenstein, spelled K-L-O-P-F-E-N-S-T-E-I-N, Kloffenstein, ate lunch together at McGuire's. "It's relaxing to be able to hang with friends, especially when you haven't seen them in 2 or 3 months," said Moore. "It feels like a block party," added Kraft. "In fact, it's kind of fun out here." They also wanted to come out and support owner Mike Hill. "Times have been hard in this industry, and this is opening a door for a little bit of recovery for small business owners," Kraft said. "I've never had outside dining before, so I guess it's a learning process," said Hill. "It's just nice to have something. I guess it's the start of good things, I hope." Business started off slowly in downtown Bloomington, but steadily picked up, and by 6 p.m., most of the tables set up in parking spaces and on sidewalks outside the establishment along Main and Center Streets downtown were filled. Several downtown restaurants, including the Luca Grill, 116 East Market Street, did not offer outside dining. "I don't have a place to own it," said Luca co-owner Tony Smith. "But for right now, I want to see what the spike in COVID-19 cases is. I want my customers and my staff to be safe." Over in West Bloomington, Craig Baker and Steve Richter were happy to resume a Friday afternoon tradition they have shared weekly at Crawford's Corner Pub, 610 West Chestnut Street. Until the governor's closure announcement on March 17th, they and other volunteers at the St. Vincent de Paul Food Pantry, 705 North Roosevelt Avenue, wrapped up the week at the pub, sometimes with as many as 20 people sitting around the table. "It's been kind of our tradition that we come down here and celebrate," said Baker. "So we're excited that they are finally opening back up for outdoor dining." Owner Bob Crawford had part of his parking lot repaved and sectioned off for 16 tables with umbrellas at the pub. "I have no idea what to expect. Each table is going to be a minimum of 2 people and a maximum of 5. No pushing tables together," said Crawford. "At the end of the day, it's a way for us to recoup some money that we lost in the last 3 months." In Uptown Normal, Raquel Cantero, a Town of Normal communications specialist, ate lunch with her husband, Ryle Ludi, and son, Ross Ludi, at a picnic area set up in front of Medici, 120 West North Street. "This is great. I definitely am all smiles today seeing these businesses open back up to the public and the community," said Cantero. Medici General Manager Joe Slane said its upper-level outdoor beer garden has had a few lunchtime dinners, but it wasn't really crowded or full. "We love having some of the regulars back," said Slane. "We've already had lots of calls about the weekend, so we are really looking forward to it." Jim Robinson used the al fresco dining seating outside the Rock restaurant in Uptown Normal to share a lunch with his sons, George and Henry. "It's a good first step," said Robinson. "It's nice to be able to eat with some sense you're at a restaurant as opposed to having to pick up and take it home and it's cold." Mayor Chris Coos said Normal has 104 restaurants. Bloomington has approximately 76 and 31 bars, City Communications Manager Nora Dunkowitz said. "Restaurants in Bloomington Normal that want to offer an outdoor dining option have to get approval from local authorities before moving forward with reopening." "The city has been great in allowing us to do this," said Crawford. "It was an easy form to fill out. You just doc sign it right on your phone and computer and send it right back to them." In Bloomington, outdoor seating areas must be closed by 10:30 p.m. That's Sunday through Thursday and midnight on Fridays and Saturdays. In normal, outdoor dining areas will close by 10 p.m. Rules for the temporary outdoor dining areas include no amplified sound in normal, but in Bloomington, music may be played until 10 p.m., providing it does not disturb neighboring residents or businesses and does not violate the city's noise ordinance. All regulations by the state or the McLean County Health Department apply, and Americans with Disabilities Act accessibility and accessible parking must be maintained. Outdoor seating was accommodated without closing streets on Friday in Uptown Normal and Downtown Bloomington. Normal set up picnic tables in parking spaces separated from street traffic by bollards linked by metal chains. To compensate for the loss of on-street parking, the Uptown Station and College Avenue parking decks are offering free parking. In Bloomington, traffic-controlled barricades were set up and on-street parking spaces used for outdoor dining. The establishments were also required to create physical boundaries for outdoor seating areas using such things as caution tape, planters, and parking blocks. The changes will remain in effect until June 30th. And on page one is a story with the headline, "Protests Continue After Officer Charged. Murder Counts Filed. City Orders Curfews to Stem Violence." The white Minneapolis officer who pressed his knee into George Floyd's neck was arrested Friday and charged with murder as authorities imposed overnight curfews to try to stem violent protests over police killings of African Americans that have spread from Minneapolis and other cities. Protesters smashed windows at CNN headquarters in Atlanta, set a police car on fire, and struck officers with bottles. Large protests in New York, Houston, and other cities were largely peaceful. Even in Minneapolis, where thousands marched downtown as the city's 8 p.m. curfew ticked past and encircled a police precinct station. "Prosecute the police," some chanted, "and say his name, George Floyd. There was no violence, but some protesters sprayed graffiti on nearby buildings. Elsewhere in the city, forces fired tear gas and rubber bullets to drive back crowds of protesters. It wasn't clear if or how authorities would enforce the curfew amid sharp questions about city and state leaders mishandling the crisis. The curfew came one night after protesters burned a police precinct station and barriers were erected around at least two police precincts before nightfall. Derek Chauvin, 44, was charged with third-degree murder and second-degree manslaughter. He was also accused of ignoring another officer who expressed concerns about Floyd as he lay handcuffed on the ground, pleading that he could not breathe as Chauvin pressed his knee in his neck. Floyd, who was black, had been arrested on suspicion of using a counterfeit bill at a store. Chauvin, who was fired along with three other officers who were at the scene, faces more than 12 years in prison if convicted of murder. An attorney for Floyd's family welcomed the arrest, but he expected a more serious murder charge and wants the other officers arrested. Prosecutor Mike Freeman said more charges were possible, but authorities felt it appropriate to focus on the most dangerous perpetrator. Meanwhile, Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey declared a curfew from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. Friday and Saturday, with exceptions for emergency responders, the homeless, and those seeking medical care. "I know that whatever hope you feel today is tempered with skepticism and a righteous outrage," Frey said in a statement. "Today's decision from the county attorney is an essential first step on a longer road towards justice and healing in our city." Protests also spread across the U.S., fueled by outrage over Floyd's death and years of police violence against African Americans. Demonstrators clashed with officers in New York and blocked traffic in Houston, San Antonio, San Jose, California, and in Atlanta, demonstrators jumped on police cruisers, set one police car ablaze, and broke windows at CNN headquarters, where hundreds were confronting police. On Monday, police were trying to put Floyd in a squad car when he stiffened and fell to the ground, saying he was claustrophobic, a criminal complaint said. Chauvin and Officer Tu To arrived and tried several times to get the struggling Floyd into the car. At one point, Chauvin pulled Floyd out of the car's passenger side, and Floyd, who was handcuffed, went down to the ground face down. Officer J.K. King held Floyd's back, and Officer Thomas Lane held his legs, while Chauvin put his knee on Floyd's neck and head and neck, said the complaint. And from Sunday's Pantograph, May 31st, on page 1, protesters gather. More than 120 take part in peaceful rally by Law and Justice Center. More than 120 people rallied to march through downtown Bloomington, Illinois, Saturday afternoon to protest the killing of a handcuffed black man in Minnesota. Michael Denniston posted on her Facebook page Saturday that she wanted to hold a rally like many that have been occurring in cities across the nation since the police killing of George Floyd earlier this week. Some black people took my post down. The Black Lives Matter movement ended up making their own organizational post and included mine, said 24-year-old Denniston of Bloomington. By 2 p.m., a large crowd had formed outside the McLean County Law and Justice Center. "We're all out here supporting the cause," she said. "If I'm being honest, I'm definitely surprised. I didn't think there'd be more than 10 or 15 people. To see our community come together for the black lives and the rights of our families, our brothers, our sisters, I am definitely surprised." Racial tensions have heightened nationwide since video surfaced of Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin holding down Floyd with a knee on his neck during an arrest. Floyd died, and Chauvin faces murder and manslaughter charges. Three other officers could also be charged, officials say. Denniston led the crowd using a bullhorn in chants and singing. Other than some shouting, the gathering was peaceful. "We had no issues," said Sheriff John Sandage. "Our main purpose was the security of the Law and Justice Center and the jail." "We started chanting, we started marching," said Denniston. "We're just out here fighting for our rights and fighting for our freedom." Floyd's death affected Denniston because, as she says, "I am the mother of three mixed children. They are mixed with black," she said. "I shouldn't have to fear for my son's life when he grows up. God forbid he gets pulled over and the next thing you know he's dead on the ground by a cop because they fear him for the color of his skin, or they fear my boyfriend for the color of his skin, or my brother next to me for the color of his skin. It's not right." McLean County deputies stood outside the Law and Justice Center while Bloomington police parked several vehicles nearby along Madison Street to keep the crowd from blocking traffic. Police also provided traffic control at intersections as the crowd marched through the downtown Bloomington area on Main Street, west on Market Street, south on Morris Avenue, east on Front, and then back downtown before dispersing about 4:15 p.m. "I think it's great that we have police out here keeping everybody safe," said Bloomington Ward 6 Alderwoman Jen Carrillo, who was among many Black Lives Matter members who attended the rally. "It's going to take a whole lot more than that." Carrillo added, "It's going to take a reimagining of what policing looks like in a way that police don't just have the power over people, but actually learn how to share power with the community." The distrust between people of color and police runs deep and is hundreds of years old, said Carrillo. "So it's going to take a whole lot more than a nice gesture here and there to actually build the justice and equity. When people ask us why we are doing this, why we are causing all of this ruckus, I like to remind people that there's no place in this country where African Americans have protested that we haven't been told that this is not the right time or we should do it this way, said Theartis Butler, 30, of Bloomington. When we see injustice happen and not speak out, that builds up, said Butler. The things that are going on in Minneapolis are basically evidence of that, that we're not having these conversations as a nation and as a community. As America, we generally put Band-Aids on knife wounds and wonder why we have an infection. It's sad, said Butler. We need to do something different. This justice does not work for everyone, said Darlene Hedrick of Bloomington. Also on Saturday, more than 1,000 people attended a peaceful march in downtown Peoria, chanting, "No justice, no peace, no racist police," and "I can't breathe." The event also included more than an hour of speeches. In Rockford, a few hundred people gathered downtown, with organizers calling for a peaceful protest. And on page A4 of Sunday's paper is an article headlined NAACP, Not in Our Town, Set Rally. The organizers of a social justice gathering planned for Sunday in Bloomington to discuss ongoing racial tensions hope it will be a model for the entire community. A community gathering of local leaders and concerned citizens will be held at 5 p.m. at the McLean County Law and Justice Center in Bloomington, said Carla Campbell Jackson, first vice president of the Bloomington Normal NAACP chapter. A lot of people want an opportunity to stand for justice, and this will be very peaceful, very fast, very meaningful program. So the town and everybody knows that we are united for doing what's right, she said. Bloomington Police Chief Don Donath, Normal Police Chief Rick Bleichner, and Illinois State University Police Chief Aaron Woodruff are all expected to speak. All three appeared at a virtual town hall meeting with the NAACP on May 21st. We are very confident in our police staff, and that is why we have been invited to the table, she said. They are delighted to be part of it. Local ministers and other dignitaries will be asked to speak. The public is invited, she added. It's open to everybody. This is not a black rally. It's not a Hispanic rally. It's a rally for justice and a rally for peace, and we invite everyone in the town that is aligned in the battle for justice, from the youth to the elderly. Not in Our Town, a local group developed to combat bullying and bigotry in the Twin Cities, will also be there. The situation in Minneapolis and George Floyd is a very stark reminder of that constant cadence of lives that are not respected, said group spokesman Mike Matejka, M-A-T-E-J-K-A, Matejka. It's another call that we as a nation need to seriously look at our justice system and ensure that there is not only equal treatment before the law, but that people are treated respectfully and not put in life-threatening situations. The gathering is not expected to last more than 45 minutes. But everyone is expected to practice social distancing, wear masks if available, and stand at least 6 feet apart. We will leave with some action items, such as what's next and how we can work together, she said. Racial tensions have heightened since videos surfaced of Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin holding down George Floyd during an arrest. Floyd died and Chauvin faces murder and manslaughter charges. Three other officers could also be charged, officials say. We want this to be a model for the country because we are coming together and we will voice our concerns about racism. But this will be a very peaceful gathering, Campbell Jackson said. From page C1 of Saturday's paper is an article headlined, FDA Asks Packing Facilities to Report on COVID-19 Problems. The Food and Drug Administration is asking farms and facilities it oversees for food safety to let the agency know if COVID-19 forced them to close temporarily or slow production. The FDA Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition issued guidelines Wednesday for facilities that handle food for human consumption and farms on challenges they face during the pandemic. The FDA gained oversight of farms for the safe growing, harvesting, packing, and holding of fruits and vegetables under a 2011 law. Reporting is voluntary, and restaurants and retail food establishments are excluded from the guidance. The notice comes a little more than a week after the FDA and the Agriculture Department announced a memorandum of understanding to keep the nation's food chain intact by making food facilities regulated by the FDA potentially subject to the USDA's use of a 1950 law known as the Defense Production Act to keep the U.S. food supply flowing. The guidance doesn't mention the memorandum, but it notes news reports of closures of some FDA-regulated facilities. The center says information provided would help the agency understand the status of FDA-regulated food establishments and the food supply in light of circumstances associated with the pandemic. The center says facilities that submit reports won't generate additional FDA scrutiny. And from page A5, the headline is Police Seek Suspect on Weapons Charges. Crime Stoppers of McLean County seeks the public's help in finding a person who is wanted on felony charges. Jonathan S. Klein, 27, is 6 foot 1 inch tall and weighs 179 pounds. He has brown hair and green eyes. His last known address was in Hayworth, Illinois. Klein is named in a warrant charging him with armed, habitual, criminal, and unlawful use of weapons. Crime Stoppers will pay cash rewards of up to $1,000 for information leading to the arrest and indictment of people who have committed felony crimes in McLean County. In another article, public asked to help find missing women. The Bloomington Police Department is asking for the public's help in finding a missing woman. Destiny Palmer, 23, was last seen Thursday. She was reported missing Friday by a family member, police said. She is described as white with brown hair and blue eyes, standing 5'2" and weighing 208 pounds. Anyone with information about Palmer's whereabouts is asked to contact Detective Paul Jones at 309-434-2548 or Bloomington Dispatch at 309-820-8888. This has been Rita Schulte reading the Pantograph excerpts from Saturday, May 30th, Sunday, May 31st, and June 1st. I will be back in just a few minutes with part 2. Please stand by.